Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Text 6, Canto 10, Chapter 26. Ekahayana asino Riyamano vahayasa Daityena yastrinarvartam Ahan Kanta grahaturam ekahayana asino riyamano vihayasa daityena yastrinavartam ahan kanta grahaturam. Ekahayana asino Riyamano vihayasa Daityena yastrinavartam Ahan kanta grahantaram. Ekahayana asino Riyamano vihayasa Daityena yastrinavartam Ahan kanta grahaturam. Ekahayana asino Riyamano vihayasa Daityena yastrinavartam Ahan kanta grahataram. Ekahayana asino Riyamano vihayasa Daityena yastrinavartam Ahan kanta grahataram. Ekahayenaha, 1 year old. Asinaha, sitting. Riyamanaha, being taken away. Vihayasa, in the sky. Daityena, by the demon. Yaha, who? Trinavartam, named Trinavarta. Ahan, killed. Kanta, his neck. Graha, by being seized. Aturam, tormented. So I'm going to go back. Text 5 and 6 are this morning's verses. 5 reads, once when only 3 months old, little Krishna was crying and kicking up his feet as he lay beneath a huge cart. Then the cart fell and turned upside down simply because it was struck by the tip of his toe at 3 months old. Text 6, at the age of 1, while sitting peacefully, he was taken up into the sky by the demon Trinavarta, but Devi Krishna grabbed the demon's neck, causing him great pain, and thus killed him. Purport. The cowherd men, who loved Krishna as an ordinary child, were astonished by all these activities. A newborn infant cannot ordinarily kill a powerful witch, and one would hardly think that a one-year-old baby could kill a demon who has kidnapped him and carried him up into the sky. But Krishna did all of these wonderful things, and the cowherd men were enhancing their love for him by remembering and discussing his activities. So look, they do the same thing. Katayantaschamam nityam tushanticha ramanticha. But their consciousness is a little different. So we're going to now go to the commentaries for text 5 and 6. But before we go to the commentaries, I want to emphasize a couple points from yesterday's verse. In the commentary for yesterday's verse, the word katam, which means how, katam, is pointed out several times. And katam, or how, it is a prompt for astonishment. Astonishment, astonishment, astonishment. That's in the commentary. That's in the BBT purports, which is also commentary. And the translation, the Sanskrit word for this particular secondary rasa is adbhuta. Adbhuta is sometimes translated as astonishment, and sometimes it's translated as wonder. Now, wonder can have different meanings. Wonder can, like, I wonder why the rain falls, or I wonder why there's coronavirus, or then there's another meaning, which is that kind of wonder. And it's not always that the residents of Vrindavan experience that secondary rasa because of their intense love for Krishna. Nothing is impossible, and they just take it in stride and are wonderful Krishna. The title of the chapter is Wonderful Krishna. So because they're contemplating in astonishment in the secondary rasa mood of wonder, our wonderful Krishna. Who is he? And wow, that astonishment. The commentary says that these nine verses, starting from their question, they're now going into contemplating his pastimes. And just as we heard and read in the purport, that contemplation was another ecstasy. The astonishment leads to yet another dimension of ecstasy. Prabhupada would like to say, variety is the mother of enjoyment. So sometimes the curtain of their predominating mood of madhurya, along with whatever their particular rasa, but the sweetness feature of their regard towards Krishna, the curtain would part, and they would go, wow, astonishment, which seems to cover their primary rasa, but it doesn't, because the primary rasa is there, and the primary rasa is being enhanced by that, wow. And then the curtain closes again. Then it's back to the primary rasa as they're accustomed to it. Another just general comment before I read the commentaries. This is a section where the residents of Vrindavan, spoken by Shukadeva Goswami, the residents of Vrindavan are recounting Krishna's pastimes without detail. They're just bullet point, like this event, that event, with some little description. This is mantra upasana. This is a sound vibration that one can meditate upon and picture in the mind, or not just imagine, but experience within the heart if you're an ecstatic devotee, the pastime. So the paintings from our BBT artists and other artists depicting pastimes are like that too. They're stimulations of ecstatic love. And it's bringing through the eyes or bringing through the ears the senses going out into the world and contacting a sense object. But if that sense object is transcendence, then what happens is, for the hearer, that's the us, the sadhaka, the covered soul, by seeing, by hearing, by contemplating, as we're doing, it's cleansing and stimulating. And according to the evolved state of consciousness that one has, the evolved state of bhakti or attachment and love that one has, it's going to have a different impact. But it's the process. The bhakti or bhagavat dharma process. Then what to speak of the residents of Vrindavan. So our acharyas, well, right in the Bhagavatam, here's another episode. In Canto 3, when Vidura meets Uddhava and says, "Oh, Uddhava, how nice to see you here in the forest of Vrindavan. How wonderful. Could you tell me how was Krishna and Balaram?" He knows what happened. They left. But he's asking anyway, because he wants to hear. And Uddhava hears his question, so the whole list of everybody, the Dwarakavasis. And what happens to Uddhava? He goes into a swoon, meaning he loses external consciousness. He goes completely into internal consciousness, where his mind and senses are not going out into the world. His mind and senses, where conceptions of life are stored, not only the mind, but in mind and senses, according to Bhagavad Gita, he loses external consciousness. Prabhupada's comment is, he goes to Krishna, he is with Krishna, just by hearing the questions. He goes to be with Krishna, just by the concentration. You know, like in the mechanical process, in the Ashtanga yoga process, it's pratyahara. Pratyahara means withdrawing the senses. Withdrawing the senses doesn't mean your arms go into your body and your eyeballs go into your head and your ears disappear. That's not what it means. It means that instead of the senses going out, the senses are withdrawn, like the tortoise. And the senses are still there, and the senses in the mind then become absorbed in something. Now, if you're a yogi, it's gradual concentration of the mind upon Paramatma. If you're a Mayavadi, it's upon nothingness. Or if you're a Buddhist, it's nothingness. Interesting. But that's temporary, because you can't stay in the realm of nothingness, because it's just anesthesia. So Paramatma, we heard yesterday from Brahma's prayer, one of Brahma's prayers to Krishna, is that those who are not engaged in the bhakti process, they may want to know transcendence. And at most, they can reach the Brahman position, but they can never know your personal feature. So the Bhagavatam is inspiring by sound, bringing us to the Bhagavan feature and the intimate Bhagavan feature of Krishna and Vrindavan. But Brahma says, because he's in Vrindavan, those that aren't your devotees, minus the bhakti process, they'll never know your personal form. Period. But there are those that can become acquainted with your impersonal feature, and here's how they do it. He gives three, four elements. One, they fix their mind upon Paramatma. So they're not like becoming Paramatma realized, but they're fixing their mind upon Paramatma. Two, they purify their mind and senses from all material conceptions. That's not easy, because the mind and the senses, according to Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's words, they carry conceptions. But to cleanse, it's just in a neutral state. Cleanse means hold in abeyance, like restrain themselves, not fully cleanse, restrain themselves. So they're in this consciousness state where they're trying to be conscious of Paramatma, and there's cleansing of the mind and senses of material conceptions. They may get your mercy. That's the third. They may get your mercy. And with that mercy, they can then have a glimpse of your impersonal feature. But they'll never know your personal feature. So the cleansing of the mind and senses is essential for transcendental realization. Say it negatively. Without cleansing of the mind and senses, one will never have transcendental realization. One may think that one has transcendental realization. That's called spirituality in the modern world. This variety and that variety. But without reference to scripture, it's notional at best. It's a feel-good mode of goodness at best. But it's not spiritual. Sorry, Charlie. It's not spiritual. You know, these days, sorry to say, spiritual is taken to be a person that's more in the mode of goodness than the rest of the people. That's a spiritual person. That's my opinion, my observation. They don't really know what spiritual means, and they don't know lots of things. So we're very fortunate we're having this particular reference to how to become attached to the personal form of Krishna. And the Brijbasis are perfect examples. So that's Uddhava. Uddhava went into trance. And then he struggled because he wanted to be of service to his elder, Vidura. Vidura asked some questions. And he wanted to be responsive, so he struggled. And then came to external consciousness, so his senses went out, but his mind and senses were totally absorbed in Krishna, and then he started doing what's happening right here. He started, there's many things he did. How wonderful is Krishna? This verse that, you know, who's a better master than Krishna? Even Putana achieved a stage of an eternal associate of Mother Yashoda in the spiritual world, because even though she wanted to kill Krishna, there was a little maternal affection, so he gave her that. So who's a better master? And on and on. So anyway, without a rerun on Canto 3, he has several ecstatic expressions and shares them with Vidura. It hurts Uddhava's heart that materialistic people think of Krishna in a material way, he describes. Here's one example. It's very painful that when Krishna said to Vasudeva and Devaki, please accept my apology, I was afraid of Kamsa, so I stayed in Braja, and I didn't come back, you're my mother and father, how mistaken I was and how foolish I was, I'm so sorry, please accept my apology, but I was like afraid of Kamsa. And when people hear that Krishna said that, Uddhava says, people will think he's material like them, and that's painful. And then he goes through other things. You know, Krishna's contradictory, apparently. So Uddhava understands him as divinity, or, you know, the absolute truth, the supreme person. And when Krishna does things that people don't understand and they take him as an ordinary person, it hurts his heart. And then after going through that whole section, there's several verses like that, he starts narrating Krishna's pastimes in this same manner. He doesn't elaborate. He just does one after the next, after the next. He goes through a chronology of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. And then he goes through a chronology of Krishna's pastimes in Mathura. And then he goes through a mini chronology of Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka. Because Uddhava knows all these things. And it's in his heart. So he's sharing his heart. So not only he's sharing his heart, but it's stimulation for ecstatic love for one who hears it. That's us. And there's other places. And another nice example is in Ramayana. How many times within Ramayana is there retelling of Ram's pastimes? So many. And not the detail in detail always, but sometimes just like a quick summary. In Ramayana, we understand from Ramayana that Brahma spoke Ramayana in 1 billion verses, which he then taught to Narada. And then Narada gave a synopsis in the beginning of Balakanda that's like a synopsis. And he told that to the synopsis, to Valmiki. And then he requested, Valmiki, you write. And there's many other things that happened, but so he wrote. And then even within the text of Ramayana, there's many, many things just like what we're experiencing here, which is just one sloka summarizing like a, you know, a cameo, a darshan of Krishna's pastimes. So my experience of, for example, when Prabhupada would repeat a particular sloka too many times to count, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times, he'd take a different aspect, different feature, and by saying it again and again, and saying it again and again, saying it again, sometimes he would just say two or three words from the sloka. And it brings to mind the whole picture of the purport, or the force, the potency, the message of transcendence from that verse. Like, stanes tatak shrutikatam tanavan manobir. So, how many times? Or, punak punash charvata charvananam. Or some phrase that he would say over and over. And over and over and over. So, just hearing that sound, for one who's accustomed to hearing it and hearing his explanation, etc., it brings forth at the heart level a remembrance of Krishna in a particular feature, in a transcendental feature. So that's one of the things, that's my appreciation at least, of one of the things that's happening here. And it's confirmed in the purport of text 6. It's, they're enjoying. They're not going into the detail in detail. At least the verses don't go into the detail. Maybe they discussed in detail. But Shukadeva Goswami's narration of what they were saying is just one verse per pastime of killing demons. Or the adbhuta feature, the astonishment that they were experiencing. Now maybe they said much more about each one, but we're only given, maybe not, maybe they just said what they said, what's being reported here. But it has the effect for the reader of the Bhagavatam to be stimulated by their mood of astonishment. So we're just, you know, depending upon our Krishna consciousness, we're at some different positions. So supposing there's just like the beginning people, the worldly people. So Prabhupada composed Krishna book for worldly people. And how are worldly people going to understand Krishna's pastimes? My understanding is that Prabhupada explained, because we were astonished that he presented Krishna book, because he said over and over again, don't go to the 10th canto. And you know, the sahajyas and the professional reciters, that's what they do once you go through the first 9 cantos. And then, you know, somewhere in the middle of the 3rd canto, he goes to 10th canto. So like, astonishment. And then he explained, because I don't know how long I'm going to live. And worldly people, when they come to know about Krishna, and then there's the unscrupulous people that want to go to the 10th canto, they'll turn away from Krishna because look at this immoral person, blah, blah, blah. And they won't be able to understand. Therefore, I created this text that's a summary study but with various explanations so that worldly people can understand. And the chapter by chapter just follows the 10th canto. But it's done in such a way by our exalted Acharya, founder Acharya, that worldly people could get a glimpse of transcendence and the personality, form, qualities, pastimes of Krishna in Vrindavan. So, here's commentary for text 5. It's short. Vishwanath writes, how could he, Krishna, when only 3 months old, moving his feet upwards, strike the cart and make it turn over and collapse? So he, think about it. He's 3 months old. How long are the legs of a child that's 3 months old? This is detailed in Krishna book. A little 3-month-old child. His feet can't even reach the bottom of the cart. Even if, you know, unless he's Krishna or Vamana. So, and then further, the cart, we don't have these experiences, but during this period of time, they didn't have storage bins, like, you know, self-storage kind of things. Families would sometimes keep a cart in their, behind the house, and they would pile heavy-duty stuff, big pots, big this, heavy things, put it on the cart. That's like their storage place. It was, the cart itself was heavy. The stuff on the cart was far more heavy, and Krishna just touched the cart, and kaboom, the pots went flying. It's like, how did that happen? That's what, you know, when the Leela happened, that's like, how did this cart turn over and all the heavy things? And then the children said, here's how it happened. We saw it. And the adults were thinking, oh, little children say so many things. They couldn't give credence to what the little children said because it's not possible. It must be, and there's some other idea. So now they're looking back on it and thinking, huh, Jiva Goswami, the cart was slightly hit by the tip of his toe. His crying indicates his very young age, 3 months. His turning over the cart at that age was most astonishing. This showed his great power. The same is illustrated in the following verses. And it gives some Sanskrit explained by Panini. Panini indicates that Masya means a month old. Here it says 3 months. The next sutra is, this is a Panini sutra, this indicates the age in a dvigu compound. Dvi Masya means 2 months old. The word Masyasya in this verse means 3 months. Since it is said in the second canto, Tri Masi Kasya Chapada Shakato. He overturned the cart with his foot when he was 3 months old. That's canto 2, chapter 7. And Jiva Goswami is referencing that. So though the Sanskrit in this verse may indicate one, may indicate two, he just says we have to go with what it says in Canto 2. That's a detail. And text 6, we read the translation. Here's the purport. Here's commentary to text 6. Vishwanath, one sentence. How could he who, when 1 year old, was stolen by Trinivarta, kill the demon? Jiva Goswami, he was just sitting. This indicates his very young age. He could not move at all on his feet. He afflicted the demon by holding his throat. And another commentary by Vishwanath. Here the cowherd men mean to say, quote, how could Krishna at the age of 1 kill the demon Trinavarta after being whisked into the sky? Then further commentary makes references drawn from Canto 10, Chapter 7. Here's the reference. What use are all these things for me, the Lord of all wealth? This event took place when Krishna was 1 year old. The Bhagavatam, 10.26.8, says, gives the Sanskrit, the demon Trinavarta took away Krishna when the Lord was 1 year old. Yashoda felt great bliss by placing Krishna on her lap and lifting him up in the air with her 2 hands. Suddenly Krishna became as heavy as a mountain top, and Yashoda could no longer hold him. That's the pastime itself. That's the chapter. Krishna knew that Trinavarta wanted to kidnap Yashoda along with himself. Therefore, Krishna displayed his Aishvarya Shakti in order to prevent any pain coming to Yashoda. Cool, huh? Becoming heavier than the heaviest, Krishna forced Yashoda to place him on the ground. Quote, Yashoda can only lift me a little, but I want to play in the sky. Desiring like this, Krishna let the asura take him away. And then continuing with the next text from chapter 7. A year after Krishna's appearance, Mother Yashoda was pampering her son on her on her lap, but suddenly she felt the child to be heavier than a mountain peak, and she could no longer bear his weight. Quote, "While living in Vraja, I do not deserve to be covered up or restricted at all." Thinking in this way, Krishna desired to go in the sky when he was only 1 year old. This event occurred. Since it will be said later, this is text 6, at the age of 1, while sitting peacefully, he was taken up into the sky, etc. Yashoda cared for him, kissing him and giving him her breast. Sometimes she lifted him in her arms playfully. She was knowledgeable of how to care for him. She was not able to carry him by her own strength. She was alone at that time during this Trinavarta pastime. So one more reference comes to mind, and that is the 64 qualities of Krishna. Of course, those qualities are there in living entities, but at a smaller degree, and their fullness in Krishna and different features of Vishnu. Clever is the quality. Clever, one of the explanations in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, is Krishna sees, of course he creates, some obstacle, and then he overcomes that obstacle in a very clever way. And when he does so, he's accomplishing many things at the same time. So, not multitasking. He's just, the unlimited potencies of the unlimited are moving things in the way that he moves things, so that many things are accomplished at the same time. He's very clever. And that's the personality of Godhead. Because we just spend some time with the appearance of Lord Ramachandra, comes to mind the same quality in Lord Ramachandra, that when he would do things, there's categories of things and subcategories of those things, but he would teach by his example Dharma, because he's the ideal king. So kings live by Dharma, and Ram set the gold standard of Dharma. And whatever he did was abiding by Dharma. And he insisted that others would follow the process of Dharma. And if there was some discrepancy in the process of Dharma, he corrected it. Sometimes he corrected it in the moment. Sometimes he corrected it very gently. Sometimes he corrected it very strongly. And sometimes he waited till later. But he was dharmic, the upholder, the bearer of Dharma. Just like immediately, one of the immediate, this is Ramkatha, not Bhagavad, chapter 26. But when Sugriva was delaying after the rainy season was over to come to see Ram and say, "The rainy season is over, let's make a plan for finding Sita," he was dilly-dallying in his palace, enjoying sensual pleasures, which Ram knew that was going on, and he concluded that was going on, and he became really angry. Now, it's a transcendental anger for the purification and upliftment of Sugriva, because he was kind of lost in sensual bliss. And that's all Lakshman needed, was to hear Ram is angry, and he became super angry and went charging off to, you know, carry Ram's message to Sugriva. Anyway, as soon as Sugriva, the message came back that Sugriva had already sent Vanaras in all directions, Ram's anger was gone. So the principle was not selfishness. The principle was, when you give your word, you uphold your word. When you give your word, you uphold your word. That's dharma. And to deviate from your word, it's a dharma. And he was intolerant of a dharma. No, in that case, it was the corrective measure was anger. But his anger subsided immediately. And as soon as Sugriva did come, you know, within an orchestrated way, he came. Ram was, you know, the anger was gone. And the dharma of Sugriva was restored. Sugriva apologized. He didn't like just cover up. He acknowledged and apologized and acted rightly, which is what Ram wanted. Then there's another interesting detail in Ramayana that I like a lot. When after the 12th year of being in of 14 being in the forest, Ram happened to visit the hermitage of Agastya, and Agastya made some. He gave him weapons. And Agastya also recommended a place not so far from his ashram, Panchavati, where it would be a nice place to finish his stay in the forest. So they went there, and it was a beautiful place. And Ram said to Lakshman, you know, very indirectly, and very, because some people can't understand anything indirect. You have to be really direct. But Lakshman could understand. Said, "You can please make arrangements for building a cottage that's suitable for my needs, Sita's needs, and your needs." He said that to correct something that happened way back in Balakanda. When it was told in Ayodhya to Lakshman that Ram was going to into exile. And Lakshman was fiery, and Ram said, "Don't be fiery." And then Lakshman said, "Take me with you, and I'll do everything to meet your needs." And that was a false ego statement, which Ram noted. But Ram didn't say anything at that time, because he chose to speak it later. But he spoke it later in this indirect sense. This is now from commentary of Govindaraj. Interesting. So Lakshman understood he was being reprimanded. Now, reprimands generally have to be more direct. But he understood he was being reprimanded. And he said, no. I don't build something that's for my needs. I'll build something for your needs. You just tell me what you would like and I'll build it. Now, sometimes people are given some service and, you know, it's not, the boundaries and parameters are not spelled out. But this, in this particular case, Ram didn't give details, but he appreciated that he got the message. You know, give up false ego, Lakshman. Even in service to Ram, or even in service to Krishna, even in service to Guru and Krishna in our lives, don't act through false ego, like I'm going to do it. Look out, here I come. Give that up. So that's a dharma principle, and then there's a prema principle. So Ram moved with both. Krishna is, in this case also, moving with both. He's, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, going to end with this. According to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Krishna's killing of the demons in Braja has a very significance, great significance, for conditioned souls. That's us. And that is, Krishna is, by his pastime, helping us to become free from obstacles that we have inside our hearts and the path of going to Krishna. Krishna's killing of these demons is for that purpose, one of the purposes. So that's a purification purpose, and then hearing and remembering and chanting and so forth. So that's a benefit for us. And on the rasa platform, he's stimulating the love of the residents of Braja by these pastimes, which during, when at one stage of the pastime, it's, they came to different conclusions. And now they're in this astonishment phase where it's a different picture of the pastime. And then they're hearing and discussing and deriving satisfaction and enlivenment in their Krishna consciousness, just like, you know, what we're doing. Restoring through sound vibration our original attraction for Krishna that we've somehow forgotten. The whole range of things. Clever Krishna. Wonderful Krishna. Everything there, and everything is there in his name. Just expand it in the form of the Bhagavatam. But everything is there in his name. Nijasarva Shaktis. And so he's doing these wonderful pastimes with his different potencies. Covering the Brijbasis so they don't know who he is, drawing the curtain back so they're wondering maybe he's divinity, and then closing the curtain again. Nice. See if there's any discussion.
No one question.
Okay. You have something? Okay.
There are a lot of things going online because of the coronavirus thing.
Yeah.
And part of it is they're saying go within if you cannot go out. So it's more like people are advertising meditation and asking people to become, I guess, more spiritual. So I was thinking, because there is this mention of the senses drawn within, you were talking about that. And so more specifically about meditating on the Maha Mantra, like hearing every day when we are chanting. So Maharaj, I wanted to check, like, does each mantra have a specific pastime that one enters, or
does it have a specific what?
Like
potency or effect?
Yeah.
Both.
I guess I'm not.
I want to be clear what you're asking.
I think I'm not so clear myself. We also talked about mantra upasana, like entering into the mood of the mantra and meditating upon it.
Yes, exactly. That's Prabhupada's words.
So, what I was thinking of asking is, does each mantra have a specific mood that when one is meditating, they enter into?
Sure. Each pastime of Krishna, each of the flowing episodes of Krishna's life, his lila and his, you know, his appearance, his form, and so forth and so forth and so on. There's a particular mood, and the mood is very fluid and dynamic. But yes.
So when we are meditating on the Maha Mantra, or hearing, I would say, because I don't really know what meditation is. It's just hearing the words. So is it like more personal, like each devotee has a specific realization when they're chanting the mantra?
It's also not only each devotee has specific. Let's just take one devotee. One devotee is going to have different realizations at different times. We're going to have different experiences, different interactions with that sound vibration at different times, different moods at different times, because Krishna's dynamic. He's not static. So then we're to speak of person to person. Even one person.
Mm-hmm.
It's a relationship that's not static, it's dynamic. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
It's a nice contemplation. Keep contemplating. More?
Just one more. When it's the perfect stage of chanting, when one awakens the love for Krishna, then the mood is more so of the mood of the Vrajavasis. Is that understanding correct?
Well, followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, yes. But Mahamantra chanters may not be followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And they'll have a different mood and different understanding and different experience. Because Krishna is everything. And different people approach Krishna in different ways.
So for us, this is the goal to have.
Well, that's the gift of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to you and to us and to everybody. Krishna Prema, and specifically Vraja Prema, amongst Krishna Prema. Keeping it simple. In Udupi, the headquarters of Madhvacharya, the central deity is Krishna, Udupi Krishna. When they call Krishna's name, their mood is not Braja Prema. But that doesn't mean they're not pure, because it's not Braja Prema. They have a mood of calling Krishna's name and worshipping Krishna's form, etc. Not like they discard Krishna's mood in Braja, but that's not at the center. That's not their primary mood. And their understanding of Krishna's pastimes may very well differ from our understanding of Krishna's pastimes. Their commentary may differ from our commentary. But that's fine. Because Nijasarva Shaktis. So we're blessed by receiving mantra from Lord Chaitanya's line. Mayavadis chant Hare Krishna. They have a different realization, different experience, different understanding, different mood.
Okay. Thank you.
This is from Rama Sarana Das. Guru Maharaj, as we discussed yesterday, normally people become spiritual or turn on their mode of goodness during the calamity time and come back to their regular business after the calamity is over. So, as sadhaka, how one can carry on and sustain the same mood of taking shelter, urgency, even after calamity is over?
How? To have a sense of urgency? Well, continue the purification process A to Z. And that sense of utsahan, enthusiasm, is front and center. Not dependent upon circumstance, but wanting to be connected with Krishna. And you know, the urgency may be selfish. You know, I want out of here, this place is crazy. Or it could be, I have now understood from that urgency situation the importance of connecting with Krishna instead of the temporary, because the temporary is miserable. So more purification, higher consciousness. So just keep going. You know, how to is the bhakti process. Follow it nicely and associate with those that are following it nicely. And that sense of urgency will become more prominent, awakened. This question is something like the theme of, let's see if Mr. Corona allows it, but if we have our 4th of July festival, Holy Name, that's the theme. His question is part of the theme of that event.
More questions, Guru Maharaj. This is from Shari Mataji. Do you recommend to say specific prayers or chant specific mantra other than our regular daily sadhana, what we do during this crisis time?
Well, you know, it's similar to the previous question. It's not just during this crisis time, it's like all the time. But are there ones particular? Prayers for protection? Not just of ourselves, but everyone? I mean, I would recommend a prayer. It's like really special. Hanuman's prayers, Canto 5, Chapter 19, the early section, where he offers a prayer to Lord Nrsingadeva for protection. It's not just about his protection, it's everyone. And what's his understanding is the Bhagavatam's understanding, which is what's behind suffering is ignorance. Ignorance is the root cause of suffering. So it's a prayer, not just remove the suffering, but remove the ignorance. With your sharp nails and teeth, which I'm not afraid of, please take from my heart such tendencies and extend that to others too. So those are two nice prayers she can make reference to. And other, you can, you know, find some favorite ones that you like and you recite those prayers, and that then coronavirus is gone, and then so we, you know, it's back to business as usual. It can be like that. Probably will be like that because the crisis heightens intensity of reaching out to Krishna. It's just natural. The Vrijbasis do it. What to speak of us.
Next question. Suchita Devidas Mataji. Guru Maharaj, Hare Krishna. Is it right to say Vraja Prema is highest form of Krishna Prema?
Yes. Next.
Seema Kalvani Mataji. A Mayavadi may become a devotee by chanting the Maha Mantra. Question.
What was the last part? Is that correct? Is that what they're asking?
They're asking.
Well, a Mayavadi can become more of a Mayavadi also by chanting. It depends upon their association with bhaktas, because it's through association with bhaktas that bhakti awakens. So one should be careful who one hears from when chanting the holy name. Or we should be careful that knowing that Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Desatarine is not just people over there, the Mayavadis. The atmosphere in the Western countries, not only, but in the Western countries, the impersonal tendency is pervasive. Not only the hardcore Mayavadis. So that is to say, our conditioning is similarly influenced. Just like if you breathe bad air, it's going to go into your system. And we're in an atmosphere that's pervaded with impersonalism and voidism. And even amongst theists, what to speak of atheists or agnostics, that this atmosphere is pervaded by. So we should be conscious not just of such tendencies within us, and be wary and be... try to get on the other side of those tendencies. because there's tendencies. Just from the atmosphere of the Western countries. Kali Yuga. Go ahead. Something further? Finished? Okay, thank you very much. Prabhupada Ki Jai.